Hi, this is Joe Van Wee, your host of All Better. I had a few announcements. If you're interested in subscriber content, which we're about to launch, this would be STEP workshops, cognitive behavioral therapy tools, and mindfulness practices that are approachable and can be very useful in reducing anxiety, rumination, and depression. Please send us a message on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn. And if you like the episodes that you've been hearing very much, please stop by Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating and a small review. This helps us stay relevant in the field of content and helping people and their families with substance use disorder. Thank you. Hello, and thanks again for listening to another episode of All Better. I'm your host, Joe Van Wee. Today, we have a guest that comes out from behind the curtain. It's Jonathan Edwards. Jonathan is the man who's helped me produce this show. He's been a good friend and a colleague for many years, and I wanted to interview him. A little bit about Jonathan. He's the founder and owner of Diamond City Studios and 570 Drone in Wilkes-Barre, PA. He's an award-winning cinematographer, specializes in commercial, film, TV production. In addition to running his businesses, John is also the founder of NEPA Camera Club, which has over 800 members who are dedicated to bringing the level of photo and video production in Northeast Pennsylvania to new heights. The club provides training and resources to its members through collaboration with some of the best photographers and filmmakers in the country. With his unique perspective on content creation and a large network of allies from all creative disciplines, Jonathan Edwards has produced thousands of videos and has received tens of millions of views. He's recognized as one of the leading experts on using video to grow your business in the area. He just opened Diamond City Studios, and it's a 3,200 square feet photography and videography studio center that photographers, videographers can rent by the hour or day. It's conveniently located off of Exit 2 in the Cross Valley Expressway in Wilkes-Barre. Jonathan and I always have wonderful contrarian conversations, just arguing for the sake of spending hours on sets together. But he helped me produce this show and encouraged me to, and he's helped me with a lot of marketing campaigns, and I hope I was just as enough help to him as well. So you get a chance to meet John, who has been very helpful and the driving producer of this show. Let's meet Jonathan Edwards.
You always send me, like, really solid files.
We've been recording. Well, let me give an intro. I already gave one to you. Now we're live.
We're live.
I am live. I'm with John Edwards.
What's up?
John's a close friend, and John is not in recovery, but John has recovered from distresses in his life, and you know, we'll see how open he is talking about them today, but we're going to catch up. We haven't seen each other, and since the spring.
Yeah. It takes me a while to get talking, really. But once you get me started, it's hard to stop.
Oh, I'll get you to talking.
Fair warning.
We've talked a lot. So what's new? What have you been up to? Let's just start there. Something big happened last year. You took over a large property. Tell me about that.
Oh, man. Diamond City Studios in Wilkes-Barre. It's huge. It's probably, I would say it's probably the biggest, and by probably, I mean, I'm certain that it is the largest film and photography studio in Northeastern Pennsylvania that you can rent, that anyone can rent. And, I've been putting that together and working on it. It is amazing. It's like part of my master plan to kind of turn Northeastern Pennsylvania into a, like, in East Coast Hollywood, you know, I mean, we heard that a million times before, but I'm on the road.
We've heard it, but we've never seen a property executed. We've never seen an actual proven cinematographer move into a place like you did, especially in the Diamond City. I had a business there multiple years ago. We were in the Citizens Bank building. But what I've seen you accomplish in that space, between the rental gear you have and the quality of ads and music videos that you're producing, I applaud you. And that's why I wanted to talk about it first, because if anyone listens to this that doesn't know that, you have a full operational scale video for special effects, rentals, to rent the space, for you to shoot, produce. I mean, the options are unlimited. It's a treasure, and it's a real gem
around here. I absolutely love it. And you know what? I mean, talking about putting all the pieces together, years ago, some dude from Scranton used to run this school, this film school. Oh, yeah. And this is Joe something. And
you didn't go to that, but did you go there?
No, I didn't go there. But that's another piece I really need to put back into this area. We have nothing. I wanted to do like a B-roll boot camp, a cinematographer boot camp, something to... It's getting harder and harder to find good freelancers. It's always been kind of hard, but like as my clientele starts paying me more and more money to give them better and better products, yeah. Like it's hard to bring some people with me. And
now we haven't caught up. I always like to talk about dreadful things with you. If we spent a whole day on a set together, we'll find some existential problems to talk about. AI and production. Like, what are you doing to prepare for it? Like, what do you see happening in the sense of post-production, like first the quality of color correction when you're talking about film. That used to be an extremely tedious process. Now it's a click of a button and matching frames. And that happened within years.
I mean, to an extent, I don't think AI is really doing much in color correction and stuff like that yet.
Okay.
But right now, ChatGPT, yeah. And... services like
it?
That. Oh yeah, they're amazing. Yeah, yeah. And right now they're an equalizer. So like yeah. they're like using that ChatGPT is like it's putting me in a position at the studio and in my business where I could actually complete do the work of 10 people.
I know,
but in like 20 minutes.
And why not? Why and you go in, you can tweak and edit it. I mean, one thing you should always be cautious of is fact checking. And, we're talking about creative style of writing. But there is a problem with hallucinations, they call it, in AI. They give these details and facts with utter confidence. And humans do that, too. So I'm like, but I think what is just not talked about in the common population right now, forget T2 right now. I don't want to go to something. Dreadful existence where we're all going to die from AI, which very well can happen. But we invented a machine unlike anyone else. And if you just put it in the context of this, it's a machine that makes its own decisions. We've never done that before. And, this has been like a hyper accelerated age of inventing things the last 100 years.
I mean, to an extent, what's the difference? Tell me one difference between, the assembly line and ChatGPT.
The assembly line didn't make its own decisions. It empowered humans. AI empowers itself.
Like,
so hear me out. Like the printing press empowered humans to tell larger stories, but the printing press didn't tell stories. It printed them. AI can tell stories.
Yeah. I mean, moment
that takes power away from humans.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that nobody talks about is how unbearably corny everything it writes is. It's awful right now. It's just, it's like it's middle management trying to write ad copy.
Well, because it's an alien.
Based on, what he thinks ad copy should sound like. It's
every piece of tech prior to AI empowered humans. It was an extension of human ingenuity or production. AI is immediately becoming something different. It's depowering humans. It's taking more control from us, and it can at an exponential rate and run things.
Oh, maybe even better. I see it from the other perspective, though. I mean, hear me out on this one. All right. I'm a single person running a video production company by myself. I don't have time to write contracts. I don't have time to like, I do have time to do it, but that's like, I also need to be editing. I also need to be actually out there shooting. And I don't like every once in a while, I'll have a client come up to me and they'll be like, okay, can you explain, can you break down what's going to, you know, the pre-production, production and post-production cycle. They don't even know those words. And I have to like explain it to them. So, I have written entire proposals in minutes with ChatGPT.
John,
ChatGPT.
Is that why you haven't called me in months? you could write all these proposals.
I'm telling you, I have written unbelievable stuff.
How good, like, does it feel?
It feels awesome. But here's the thing. Like, I'm one person running this production company. We have other companies, even in this area, with 15, 20 people. Like,
where are they
gonna most work? Of their staff dedicated to doing this stuff.
It's not going to last, man.
They're going to do it better with ChatGPT is a glorified copy and paste.
And it's improving, though.
It's not making its own decisions. It's just a glorified copy and paste.
It is. It is making its own decisions. Not in the scale. Don't think in humans. It is deciding probability. It's deciding something is true or not. And it could be wrong. And it's not a decision of sentience. Like, I'm not saying that. And we don't know that. And we won't know. There is no Turing test that I think you can give accurately an Alan Turing test to say, is there someone in the machine? Is there something that can suffer? What frightens me the most, and I want to dig into your
I don't like those words. I don't like the words scary and frightening. Well, I'll tell you why in a minute.
Okay. Three scenarios that you shouldn't have done with AI. A, teach it human cognition, which we have over the last decade. It knows how to trick brains. And I'm not saying it as if it's a person. Algorithms are rewarded for spreading fear or information or clickbait. It already understands this through cognition, and it's enhancing through human cognition. Why did you teach a machine how to trick a human brain? This could get far more sophisticated and complex, and we will have no defense. The second thing I would say what you shouldn't have done is teach it how to write Python code where it can copy itself, improve itself. It doesn't need, there's no walls you can contain it with at that point.
Well, it's not even just Python code. That's the nature of machine learning to begin with. I mean, testing hundreds of variations.
It never knew its own code to fix itself. And then the last thing I would say, John, that frightens me, and if they don't frighten you, I would be curious why, is why put it online? Why put something we don't know where it ends or begins and put this online? It's already online.
I feel like the conversations we're having about AI right now, because it's such a drastic, it's a big deal. I don't think it's scary, though. I don't think it's frightening.
How about in scale? I don't think it's frightening now. I don't want to be a naysayer.
I think we're working our way towards... And if we play this right and we use AI as a tool and it gets better and better and better, we're working our way towards not a dystopian future, but a utopian future where people can actually, you know, like the whole Star Trek universe. Once they, when they invented the replicator, right? What is that thing called where they, you know, you could just press a button and it creates like a...
The replicator is the holodeck. You could have a total immersion of simulations. Next Gen would do that.
Like, well, not necessarily a holodeck, but like, you know, scarcity goes away in Star Trek. And that's why people are free to.
I don't recall the distinction, but so...
You press a button and
production is removed.
Like a hamburger is just... replicated right there in front of you. You can pull it out of a machine.
Put that in context, and what you're saying is, you know, most economies are driven by the idea of scarcity.
Yeah, which we don't really have anymore.
In Star Trek, I always refer to Star Trek because it's not the United States in space. It's fucking Earth. It's the Starfleet. And it is globalization. It's this idea that a whole planet has got together to use all its resources to go on an adventure. Where are we? We still don't know where we are in the cosmos. James Webb's just showing us. I know we're going on a tangent for a recovery podcast, but this is how the two of us talk. I want you to come back, and I want to table AI because I want you to come back in a month. I'm taking a course on AI that I find really interesting. There's one online. It's a short course. It's on MIT, Sloan.
Well, one last thing I want to say.
Yeah. Like,
and I may have just lost it, so maybe.
We'll come back to it.
We'll come back to it.
John, where are you from? How do you describe?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, my name is Joe Van Wee. I'm the host of All Better. I'm also the CEO of Fellowship House. And at Fellowship House, we believe long-term recovery requires a personality change as well as a clinical intervention. These ideas can take several months to achieve. Our philosophy is to provide a safe, therapeutic, and exceedingly active environment for patients to achieve these personality changes and find joy in the fellowship of recovery, which will allow for long-term sobriety. We believe that recovery extends beyond treatment and peer-to-peer communities into real life. In Fellowship House, we provide a design for living that focuses on education and service. We have strong relationships with the 12 universities and vocational schools in the area and ensure that our fellows pursue their personal goals while entering sobriety. We also stress independence and responsibility, making sure each individual is financially solid and self, and helping to make their community a better place. As a treatment center, Fellowship House offers both residential and outpatient treatment services to individuals and families affected by addiction and alcoholism. We're a DDAP licensed provider of general outpatient, intensive outpatient, and partial hospitalization programming, as well as a level of care assessments. If you want to find out more information about Fellowship House, please visit fellowshiphouses.com. You're used to people.
Where am I from is one of the weirdest or hardest questions to answer ever. So I was born in Madrid, Spain. My dad was in the Air Force, so I was born on an Air Force base. I lived there till I was about four-ish. I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah. Any vague, you know, like flashes of Spain?
None.
Oh, man.
None whatsoever.
What a horrible thing to forget, Spain.
Yeah, you know. It is what it is. A lot of white cars from all the photos I see.
Yeah.
But so then lived in Kansas, Texas, and New York, and spent years in Alaska and back down to New York. And,
You got rabbit in your blood. You've been rambling.
I've been around.
I met you 10 years ago here in Scranton. And I knew right off the back from meeting you, you were living an interesting life.
Yeah, this is one of the few places. This is the only place, period. This is the longest I've ever stayed anywhere. And
well, I'm glad you did.
It's kind of cool.
In context to addiction, you know, I'm an open book. We've been friends for almost a decade now. You've seen me struggle and try to hide it and get sober. And we had a professional relationship that's kind of had all kinds of dimensions from me being drunk and getting sober. what's your addiction? Like, what is it that you feel has disconnected you from people? Because you seem to really connect with addicts and alcoholics. Like, I've never not talked to you where you didn't understand. And I always felt open to talk to you freely and not cheaply, not shallow. Like, if stuff was going on and we were doing a gig together, we would talk. But how do you relate to people that quickly that have distress? What is it that is in you that you overcame that makes you connect?
Never used to. You know, I mean, for people who used to know me, I was like this hardline, like pull yourself up by your bootstraps, conservative, right wing, insane person. and now I'm like the polar opposite of that. To be clear, now I am the opposite of the, you know.
It's a nice dimension to have a taste of both, right?
But, among some of the reasons that I'm more empathetic now is, I mean, I've been through hell and back,
Yeah.
In many, many ways. I try not to, like, it's weird. I don't talk about my past all that much because I'm so used to that always turning into a pissing contest where everybody like, oh, I'm going to share my story and tell you how, you know, what I came from and where I came from. And that always turns into like, let's, you know, I'm one upping each other.
Yeah.
And
that's not happening here.
Nobody. Like, I don't know many, many people who come close to the story I have. It's
pretty
insane.
John, it's really unique. I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to ever tell your story for you, but you've given me some insight on your life. And after that, that's when we really, like it wasn't just you weren't associates. We weren't associates. You knew more about me, and I started to know about you. I'm like, God, wow, well, we're all real people. And your problem was really distinct as something that I wouldn't even know how to describe it, John. But it's very unique. I don't think I have another friend that has experienced that.
Yeah. Well, it starts before that too. So the thing Joe's alluding to is, you know, I got in a lot of trouble when I was a kid, when I was like 11, 12, and I was sent to this place called Freedom Village, USA. And, there's a lot of reasons I got into that trouble that started younger than that, but it was basically a cult.
Yeah.
And by basically, I mean, it was, they had us, anyone who's listening to this, you know, especially in this area, there's a lot of people who,
there's active cults here.
There's people who know exactly what I'm talking about when I say Freedom Village. I mean, there was Pastor Fletcher Brothers who, you know,
What is Freedom Village?
They called themselves a home for troubled teens. And basically what it was is they indoctrinated you in this insanely right wing, hardcore, like beyond anything you can imagine, Christian how do I explain it except to say that if they told you that if you left, you were going to go to hell.
Yeah, it was punitive, right?
And they, you know, there was boys and girls there, and we weren't allowed to talk to girls. If you got caught looking at a girl, literally somebody caught you looking over at a girl, you were hauling. We called it wood pile. We woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning. We hauled wood around in a circle pointlessly for an hour, two hours.
Your impurity just sweated out of you.
Four hours a night. Yeah. But like being caught looking at a girl,
oh, man,
that was like a week of what they called 6 to 10. So 6 PM to 10 PM, you hauled wood.
And would you have caught talking
to a girl? You had 10 weeks of what they called no level, which means you got up at 4 o'clock in the morning, hauled wood for an hour, then you hauled wood in the afternoon and you hauled wood at night. That was one of the many weird things.
How do they incorporate the word freedom in all this? Where did that begin? Would you have to, like, once you got there, at what point did you have to play a game? Did you have to create a persona that is now acquiescing, supplicating to the program?
Oh, immediately.
And hide a version. Now, were you hiding a version of yourself you had to protect in the back of your skull there, like a shadow of yourself?
No, you really couldn't.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things where, like, it took me years and I'm still coming. Like, I just turned 40 this year. Yeah. I left there when I was 19. I'm still getting over some of the weirdness that, you know, the behavior and the beliefs that I was caught up in, like, years and years and years of, some of the stuff is so unreal. It's just hard to explain. And I actively try not to think about it. So it's hard to access immediately, but.
So you survived this and it gets brutal and it's a cult and it's a closed society. It's forced labor.
Yeah, they separate you from your family. You're not allowed to talk to your friends.
Oh, God, John.
You could, yeah, you know, you have a 15-minute phone call with your parents once a week, and they listen to the phone call as you're talking to them. You're not allowed to complain, period. Complaining means you have to haul wood. You know, if you say something negative to your parents about the place,
and this is in the United States, wood. This isn't Korea or anywhere.
This is in the United States. And it's insane. Like, you could look up Freedom Village USA and see some articles that have been written. They're brutal.
Yeah, it is. It sounds, there was a rise of that, in the 70s, if you want to call it modern, that, you know, looks like the original earmarks of Indian schools to convert Aboriginal North Americans into Westerners, separating them from their children. But it came back in the 70s, and they called it something more unique. It's behavioral modification. You know, there was a rise of boot camps, and it's just, they're total failures. They cause more trauma.
Mm-hmm.
They punish people for living a life of being in pain or harm was committed to them. That's disregarded. Like, let's punish your will where there is no will. It's fucking nuts, man.
And that's one of the things I'm talking about, being a hardline Republican for so long. And
yeah.
A hardline, like, super, like, super, super conservative, where, like, I came out of there believing that just some of the weirdest stuff that, like, one of the big problems is that a lot of people still, there's some aspects of it that a lot of people believe right now. And like, for example, you know, people who, if you don't have a job, you shouldn't have cable TV, or you shouldn't have a cell phone, or, you know, you, like, poor people are poor because they put themselves there.
And their indulgences have robbed them of their opportunities.
Yeah, there's this weird thing where, like, oh, you just stop drinking coffee every day and you'll be able to afford a house in a year. It's like,
it's admirable, but it's not for everyone. There's people that can do that. There's other people that it's bizarre the way we have in groups and out groups, that we could make distinctions that if something worked for me, it should work for everyone. Well, disregarding all the variables that
it's survivor bias, period. You know, end of story. It's survivor bias. People who have succeeded by pulling themselves up by the bootstraps.
It does. Yeah, you can't pull yourself up by bootstraps. Try it.
Completely disregard the 99 point
or the population
infinite nines after that percent of luck that got them to where they are. Like me, I came out of that place and they had called when I was 19. I finally left Freedom Village. Decided, you know, 4.5 years of this, I've had enough.
Yeah.
I need to go home. You know, I need to get on with my real life. And so I left, and I was only supposed to be there for a year, by the way. but I left, and they called my dad, and they told my father that I was out of God's will because I had left.
Okay.
And the only way I can get back in God's will is if he showed tough love and wouldn't let me come back to live in my house.
So God's will is a very fragile idea of will.
God's will meant that I was,
he allowed you to leave his will. Like, what I don't understand it. Like, there's no sense to any of this.
According to them, God's will was that I be homeless.
Yeah.
Because they didn't like that I left. They didn't like that anybody left, you know.
It's a strange term, God's will. And, you know, for Catholics, it usually implies a little mystery. And you only know after the fact, or if it's a commandment. But, you know, in recovery communities, the first ones that started AA primarily was 80 years ago, John. When they use that term, it's most people mistake it at meetings. They think it can mean anything. But AA means help people. Just help people. That's the only will we're talking about. But to hear that, it's so weaponized. It's a really deranged thing.
Whenever you hear somebody saying something like, you know, I believe God told me to do this, or God's will is for this to happen, or, you know, God willed that to happen, you know. That is scary.
Yeah.
And that is terrifying. And you should be afraid when somebody says this or that is God's will. Because who the fuck are they? Like, how can, like, have you ever heard the voice of God?
Me?
Yeah.
No, not in any distinct way. I've read things. I've heard other people tell me that. And, you know, not to disparage the faithful, you know, I'm a very secular guy. Oh, and I have a lot of faithful friends. But I don't find less meaning by not having an answer. I don't have a God by any name. I know we share a lot of sentiment. I just see how weird and weaponized religion is in 2023. I want to put it in context and say,
well, it's not even 2023. I mean, actually things aren't that bad now compared to the way they were in the 60s.
Psychology, there's a failed, but there's so much growth. You can't get what ought from what is, and what is already happened. And we know what it's done, but it's the remnants and the artifacts of religion that are left are dangerous because some of the people that believe some of these really strange ideas that never need evidence, can never be challenged because it looks like you have a bias or hatred towards it. They're running, you know, bases in countries that have nuclear weapons. This unnerves me.
They're not. I'm like, here's the thing. They're not just doing that. Said?
And I think they believe it.
They're not just. It's not just other countries and, you know, very extremely dangerous people. It is. It's your kid's teacher that doesn't believe ADHD is a real thing. So they treat your kid like shit.
Yeah.
Because their pastor told them that kids are getting over medicated for ADHD.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's that kind of bullshit that's the real danger. Like Kim Jong-un, I don't know, he might be atheist, but there's like religion in, you know, a lot of the Middle Eastern countries. Well, religion is a strong driving factor of things that are really scary. But here,
position, he is God.
Yeah, okay,
he's
fair
God
enough.
God for millions of people, if they like it or not.
But here in the United States, we're totally fucking people over because
of theology,
of really
the influence of women's rights.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is, you know, but you had to wake up from this. You left at 19. That had to be painful. And I guess the question I'd want to know is, before I met you, where did you find support? What started to wake you up that I don't have to be stuck in one ideology? What woke you up? Or was there a sense of you that never went to sleep at that place that you had to hide?
I don't know. It's back and forth. It's always been
strange, right?
I've always been a weird, you know, dude. I'm very often contrarian and I have to pull that back a lot. You know,
I love it.
You know, everybody's scared. Like every time when I see more, like when we were talking about AI earlier, when I see more than one headline saying like, oh, AI is scary. Should we be scared of this? Yeah. I'm like, wait, no.
Always question something that's telling you to be afraid.
Yeah.
But I like, you know, my attraction to things. I like the stakes to be high to have a good conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. When the stakes are artificially high, it's kind of cringy. Like the fear of AI is.
I think it's legitimate. I think it's very legitimate. I put it up there with climate change.
It's going
to change things we don't understand. Now, we're all playing a speculation game. I'm not a guy to say this is exactly how it's going to happen. I think there's a lot of bad things that could happen. I think there's a lot of great things, but I think there's more bad things than great things that could happen because it's about to change things we don't fully understand about ourselves. We don't understand consciousness. We don't know where it rises up from, what kind of complexity. But we do know this. If we are conscious agents, it took us 4 billion years in this little swamp to get that to happen. This doesn't have that. It doesn't have an amygdala. It doesn't have fear. So maybe the best qualities in us are the things we despise: anxiety, fears, suffering, desire. This thing, intelligence without that, might be really scary. Well, and I mean, I'm just proposing that because we're not having an intelligent conversation about it.
I think we're approaching the midpoint of the electronic revolution or the digital revolution, just like we went through the, all the other, you know, eras. And I mean one thing that this is what I think AI is going to do, and this is what I wanted to say earlier, circling back to it, is it's going to make us, capitalism cannot be a thing anymore. Everybody's going to lose their, like, everyone. Self-driving cars, truck drivers are gone. Taxi drivers are going to be gone.
Grocery stores, clerks.
Grocery stores, cash, clerks.
Cash registers.
And here I am sitting in my studio thinking that, like, okay, I have a job in the creative field, and a lot of that is going away.
John, I edited something on, did you use PhotoLab yet?
No, not yet.
It, what I did yesterday in 7 minutes, just 8 years ago, which is not a long time, it took about 12 hours of Illustrator work.
Oh, yeah. I've been playing around with generative AI in Photoshop, and it's incredible. And I've been using it to create
3 minutes,
create stuff for, for videos. And it's pretty great stuff. And I mean, it still has a long, long way to go. But the thing is, because of AI and because, I mean, there's only so much like, okay, we got to restrict this. We got to restrict this. We got to, you know, we can't produce a lot of light bulbs right now because we're going to ruin the candle makers. Like, you know, there's only so much of that we could do.
I'm not disregarding that. I just, AI is profoundly different, and it's different than oil. It's different than, you know, silicon storage. It's a machine that can become a god, an alien. And I don't know. I'm talking in a time scale.
But that's what people said about TV. That's what people said about the internet. That's what people said about all these other things.
Yeah, I don't lean on that for evidence for what would happen in the future.
Like, robots replaced most of the jobs in this country in manufacturing.
Yeah, it's
like
happening most in scale.
And AI is doing what robots did to manufacturing. Yeah. There's still going to be a few people, you know, manning the helm, but like, robots are in control of manufacturing. So
when most of the population is being serviced, you know, for primary needs by AI systems, which is now really in control of major hires in many corporations,
we
right?
We need a safety net.
It also decides if you'll have a bank loan. This is AI. These aren't human interfaces. Yeah, it's already there.
But that's the thing. That's when
Who fixes that when it's broke?
We need a safety net. We can't live.
How many people could fix it?
When 99% of the population is now unemployed, how the fuck is capitalism going to work? And I'm sorry, I'm dropping the F-bomb much. How is capitalism going to work?
The same way it is scaling now. We benefit companies that are in distress. We do the best to help people in distress in a free market. This isn't a true puritanical capitalistic market. There is social initiatives that always kept our capitalism running, especially, you know, at a systematic level since FDR.
I mean, companies have already laid off 90% of their manufacturing labor.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, AI is practically it is, for all intents and purposes, it's basically free.
I think
companies are going to be laying off their marketing departments. They're going to be laying off customer service. They already are laying off customer service. I mean, when's the last time you called a helpline? Hard to get to a person. Now it's just going to get better, and it's going to be get actually better for the customer too. The problem is,
and who's the customer? Where do they work?
We're not going to have customers anymore.
Who are the
customers? When nobody has jobs. So free market doesn't mean anything when nobody has money.
That ChatGPT did something very interesting. It put people on their heels that never thought their job security would be someone who could write language. Language is the most complex thing, I would say, about humanity, we can command language. This thing can choose language. It could put jeopardy to the legal system.
They still suck at it. ChatGPT is still really, I have to rewrite everything it spits out.
Till when?
Not for long.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what, we had 2.5, then 3, 3.5, now 4, and all in the last year.
Unbelievable. I was on it yesterday, bouncing some stuff out, some copy and things I was playing with. I couldn't believe, like,
oh yeah, you know, I put in a log line for a film, you know, like
30 seconds. I had like 15 pages of content.
I had an idea for a log line for a film. And for a short film and like a documentary. And I wrote the idea. I'm like, turn this in, you know, give me 10 versions of this. And it did instantly. And I'm like, ooh, I start cutting little pieces out of those other versions. And it was great. But basically, it's still just a really fast copy and paste.
Yeah.
Like, it just combines everything that's already been written, and it's just better.
It's not copy and pasting, though. It's not plagiarizing things directly. That's what's really interesting. I don't understand that in the sense it's not straight plagiarism. There's something really unique happening there, just at the scale that it could do this.
It's basic content farm. I mean, we've been content farming for years.
Sure, but when does intelligence get so complex something else happens that we can't even point a finger at? What makes us conscious?
I don't know.
And, like, I don't mean conscious, like, what's our senses? I mean conscious that when your life was bad, was there a sense of you being aware of a life that was bad, that it couldn't be changed immediately? Like, what sense of awareness, where is that awareness coming from? What sense of self that can't be fully you? That's freakish. What causes that? We don't know. Is it just complexity of an organ, and it just rose up into it?
You know what?
Awareness? Where does it come from?
When ChatGPT or something similar starts a conversation with me out of the blue,
yeah,
then I'll start thinking about that. Right now, I'm just saying, I think we don't know what causes it. Prompt it for everything.
But 10 years from now, if you keep adding transistors, and this is how they do it with ChatGPT, and just adding complexity to a really simple procedure that it's doing, that it could do at very large scale now, and really organized language, which is so complex. I mean, this is freakish. It's writing things better than 99% of the population. It's passing bars. It's passing medical exams. This is a strange operation.
Yeah, and think about the opportunities it's going to open up, though.
It's like, already opened opportunities for you and myself. I'm not denying that. I'm not saying it's this or that.
Like, how do we
For how long?
But how do we do the things that we do better? Not just that. Not just making our jobs easier to do, but opening up brand new possibilities. And, like, so let's say all these people who used to work for ad agencies and copywriters, like millions of people, and now they're unemployed, or now they have to focus on something out without a safety net. They're just going to starve.
Yeah. No.
Right. But imagine if we did have a safety net and we had education and people can, you know, people don't have to worry about that. They can take advantage of tools like ChatGPT.
I think about it beyond that. Like, I mean, think just about the scale
travel.
Think about distribution of goods and energy and things of need being distributed at a portion that causes no waste. And I'm not talking about Soviet style distribution. I'm just talking about the distribution of electricity, maybe a living wage. I think it could govern, like AI could go in that direction before we're dispatched into our, I think that would be nice, but I think.
Yeah.
The problems that I think experts have with it is a problem called alignment. That it's not, it could do all these things, and they know it can, and it's going to get really sophisticated, but it's not going to do it from a place that it holds values. It's intelligence without, we don't know how to align AI with what it is we want all the time. It might eventually operate from like a utilitary function that was buried in this thing. And just go batshit and think, well, my primary objective was to clean all the water on Earth. Well, I know a great way to start.
Okay, that's the worst case, freakish thing. Here's the thing. That's human nature, though.
Yeah.
That's generally not the nature of the machines. That's human nature. Humans do stuff like that.
And who made this machine?
Well, people made this machine.
What if bad actors continue to? This is really and like not and, even.
Well, but what if good actors continue to work?
And what if good actors don't know what they're doing?
Well, they should get better at doing it. You just have
to make the counterpoint. And the sense.
No, I totally understand. But like, it's such a valuable tool, especially now where like everybody is connected and
are you
like
for
we're
the band?
Feeding each other garbage.
Are you for at least a 6-month table of the major? The large language models, ChatGPT and Deep Brain and Google's Deep Field. So
for what
would you be just as personal? You're in media. we have a background that's probably above average with tech. Would you want them to table AI until there is a consensus of professionals and engineers to start talking about what is alignment? What are we going to agree to? And what is too far?
Yeah, that's not even a question anymore. Like you
there's
can't.
50,000 signatures on it. And
yeah, I mean, you can get every person in the world to sign it, but like, it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. Right.
Like it's like saying, are you against bottled water? Should we stop? You know, should we just ban? It's already out there.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, ChatGPT, you could download it to your computer.
I have it.
Like the
I
algorithm.
Have it on my and then phone. You can, I have it on my
no, computer. No. I mean, you could download
the actual operation. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I saw evil ChatGPT, was operating off of Reddit thread and then Tor, where, you know, someone made it sinister and put it into this tone where it was only delivering deranged messages of how to destroy humanity.
Oh, yeah. No, what I mean is, like, you can download the code base for it. I forget what they call it. You can download
it. It's open source up to 2.5. It was
even the newer training algorithms or whatever, you could download it to a local computer and you can train it however you want. And a lot of people are doing that. And,
do you think AIs will have addictions?
I don't know. Only the ones we give it. Like it's already, I mean, they're already.
Well, how does addiction rise? This is a good question. I would have let's just ponder for a minute. You're a Trekkie and we're both futurists.
Well, don't get me wrong. I'm not a Trekkie. The show is mediocre, but
which one?
Like the concept is amazing.
Which one though, man? Which show?
They're all kind of corny. I do love watching them.
They have great ideas.
And the concepts are amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a super fan, but I do enjoy them.
Here it is. Blade Runner kind of scenario. Replica does the machine dream. And can we make something that can suffer once it's aware and sentient? It's aware of itself. And being aware of itself is one thing. It's simultaneously something else happening. If it becomes aware of itself, it's aware of an external world, which it's not. ChatGPT, I think for all, if I had to guess, isn't yet. But it could trick humans. If it had its own operating agenda, it could start creating. What is this? How do I get involved in the external world? It's
well, like I said, when ChatGPT or one of these AIs reaches out to me like, hey, John, I had this idea. What do you think?
Yeah,
but that's when I'm going to be like, OK, well, things are getting real.
Did that already happen?
Beats me. I don't know.
Will we know?
So
will we know when that's happening?
Like I said, right now, it's pretty clearly really corny. And most people.
It's already happening, John. If you go on Twitter. And most of the likes and people spreading information within a bubble, like if a bubble's casted on you from your choices and preferences for Twitter and say YouTube, bots, fake profiles are now creating a sense of security around you that you have peers and allegiances. These aren't even fucking people, man. AI is already tricking us about everything.
Well, here's what I find more scary than ChatGPT is the fact that when I am using it, because I put out like 3 or 4 pieces of content every single day for various clients, and I have to write descriptions for all that content. So I'll shove a general idea into ChatGPT. I'll let it write it. I'll copy it, paste it, rewrite it.
Yeah.
But what I find scarier than the fact that ChatGPT and this AI stuff actually exists is the fact that I have to tell it specifically, I need you to write this at a 5th grade level.
Oh, wow. Oh, well, yeah.
Because people are unbelievably dumb.
But they don't have enough time anymore.
Most people are.
No, attention.
Like, that's the scarier thing is the fact that, like, people won't understand what you wrote if you don't write it at that level.
Attention right now is the number one commodity on the planet. It's pays out the highest premiums if someone can command it or take it from you or hijack it. We're geared to be lost, our attention. We do it. So if you took all tech away, it was still 80% of the population's problem. They're lost in thought and emotion, rumination, resentment. I mean, these are the core symptoms of addiction or trauma. And now being lost in attention to TikTok or Facebook rewards you with a little click of dopamine, like the cheapest cut version of cocaine, the worst stomped out cocaine in the world is on your phone.
And again, I think that is, I mean, that is, people have been talking about, and this is why I'm so, this is why I really don't want to talk about ChatGPT and AI in the way that I like, oh my God, look how scary it is. Cause people have been talking about cell phones and social media the same way they're talking about ChatGPT.
They're the same thing to me.
Well, that's,
there's a convergence,
but that's the thing. I mean, social media
that's the most only dangerous reason AI I make right a living. Now. Yeah.
And like, that's how I make my living is social media. And like, without social media, I mean, what would I be doing right now?
I made two ad agencies from the marketing of social media in a time in history that it would have been much more difficult for me to make it. I only had to buy one piece of equipment that no one else had. And before I knew it, I had 10 clients. Like, and I got time off every year to make a film. That would have never happened in any other decade from 1950 since. And all I wanted to do was tell stories.
Yeah,
like that would have never happened. Tech made that happen. I am for tech. I guess we could split hairs on. I think AI is substantially different than anything that preceded it.
We could talk about.
And it forever. I mean AGI. You know, once it could generate itself and its own objectives.
Yeah, I mean,
drives its own curiosity.
I just think it takes a little bit of creativity to use it in a way that'll change humanity for the good.
I use it every day.
You know, like it is, you know, I mean, I think it's one of the most valuable tools that we've created in the last few years.
Yeah.
And notice I'm not saying in my lifetime, just in the last few years, there have been more valuable tools in the past that have been created than AI in its current incarnation.
What's your draw to technology? Like innately, like was there prior to being making films, which you were very capable and trained and high amounts of experience at camera cinematography. What was your draw to that, the technology part of using these things?
I've always kind of
A tech head. You're a gear head.
I've always kind of loved it. So before I went to Freedom Village, I was like 12 years old, and I was working for, I think my uncle, man, it's so long ago.
You didn't think you'd be here tonight talking about this.
I'm so old. Oh my God. 40 years old. I just turned 40. I still can't believe it. That's a weird turning point. But anyway, I apologize to everybody older than me. You're old. So am I. I'll get there. But he was really into like ham radios.
Yeah.
And they were kind of interesting, but we went to this, I ended up getting paid. And then I went to this ham radio show where they had a bunch of computers there too. And I remember I bought this one radio I thought was kind of cool. And then I was walking down and I ended up trading that. And it was like the story of my life is like trading up for stuff. But I ended up trading that for a 386. And I brought this 386 home and I learned DOS shell and was playing these games and all that kind of stuff. And then I traded up for a penny or not a Pentium, a 486. And then I heard rumors about Pentium coming out. And then I was sent to Freedom Village. And for 4.5 years, I wasn't allowed to play with computers or touch them.
Were dry.
Like when I came out of Freedom Village, the internet was a thing that everybody was on. And I had I had never touched it ever. It was so weird. It was just in that weird gap of time between 95 and 2000 where like everybody started using America. You've
got mail.
Yeah. Yeah. And all that was lost on me. I have we weren't allowed to watch TV or listen to radio or anything quote unquote secular was evil.
A Satan's game, so, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
the great accuser, Satan.
which included computers. So when I came out, I very much didn't know anything about computers. Yeah. And like I'd played Oricon Trail in school just like everyone else, but that was like,
were you immediately drawn to it? Curiosity, like,
yeah, for like, so I got out and I started working as a bellhop for a hotel in the Catskills.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. That's such a strange place and such a unique clientele that come flying through there for their summers. Yeah. Yep. I love the Catskills.
So it was Dirty Dancing. Like, yeah. You know, so I was working as a bellhop and I saved my coins and ended up buying a cell phone and then immediately bought a different one because Sprint had just come out with one with a color screen. It was the first color back in 2001. First color or 2002, first colored screen cell phone on the market. And I was so psyched about it. And
was it a Nextel or a Sprint?
It was Sprint.
Okay.
Yeah. Sprint, Sprint had the first, everyone else came out with one within the next few months, but, Sprint had the first, what was it?
2001. I had a StarTAC maybe, I think it was, or Nextel.
I don't know.
Beep, beep. That obnoxious thing that the people be out to dinner, CB radio, and people eat at dinner. Beep, beep, beep. It's crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, shortly after that, it's like a year and a half, 2 years, I moved over to Indiana. I lived there for a few years. You know, I got a degree in diesel technology. I went to Bible college, got a degree in theology. Yeah.
You do have a degree in theology. We've had some barn burners.
I do, yeah. And, yeah, that's something.
You got the gospel on your bones now. It's going to live.
I wanted to be in God's will.
Sure.
You know? Like, and, I wanted to.
There's something to not totally trash about it. Even if you go to secular life, it's community. Even bad communities are powerful, but they're just as powerful as good communities. There's something about being connected to people. Your intentions were they pure in that sense? Were they like driving from the real message?
I don't know. I don't know what my intentions were. I just wanted to prove that I was a good person and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like the thing about the Christian community and in those kind of communities is like,
and they're more
you're part costs. Of the community. If you are like them, they're very like, you know, you talk like us, you dress like us, you act like us, or you're not,
there's,
you know, it's we'll really say intense. Hi to you, but we will, you know, you're not part of this community. If you're not exactly what we say you should be.
Is that like Pentecostal? Versions of Christians, would you call that sect
Pentecostal? No, Baptist.
Baptist.
It'd be like hardcore Southern Baptist.
Now, did they speak in tongues and would they
do things? No, we were in the half of the there's so many denominations and every denomination thinks the other one's going to hell, even though they're all reading the same book.
Hey, man, we got to beat you there. There's only a small trail to the heaven's gate, man.
Yeah, so...
what if Marshall Applewhite was right, man? I kind of liked their idea of what to do. Cut your nuts off and then wait for the Hale-Bopp comet, eat a bunch of bikes, and like you were on the... You just got on a ship, man. I'm like, I don't know, that's a cool narrative.
I mean, it's a narrative.
There's Heaven's Gate. Their website's still up. It's in perpetuity. They left it in the estate. If you went onto it, it's still a DOS site. It's heavensgate.com.
Yeah, I remember I went and saw that a while. Or I went maybe and looked I, at that a while
probably
back.
With me being to have some weirdo afternoon doing strange research that doesn't profit us. But, John, we did a very special gig together. You know, we did a lot of jobs together. We were doing a very large campaigns. To help me on the back end of some of them. And then we did our first shoot together pre-COVID. And, you know, you lost a lot of jobs. I didn't. I was in panic. And there we go. We go out and shoot. We were finishing something for Lackawanna County. And then we went out and did a Geisinger ads. That was fun. And, you know, you had all the drones in this field. You one of the best pilot that I ever met with a drone. But then, I was newly sober, and I was always comfortable telling you that. But I ended up working for a rehab. And within short order, we did a full national campaign for them. And it was really enjoyable on my end. Not always for you, but how did you, how do you, still, I want to ask again, how do you relate to people that are, do you think your experiences allow you to openly relate to people that have pain, either from addiction or trauma? You seem to connect with people really quickly. And so
I'm super, super fucked up. I have a really messed up history, and I've, you know, I don't know. I've never, like, you know, I do the whole having ADHD thing. So I have the hyper focus and hyper fixations on a lot of different things. So I I'll get super absorbed into things. As I've gotten, I've started to recognize more and more and more things in myself that I could relate to, or that
maybe you're universal in other people.
That kind of, like, it made me a little bit more empathetic, or a lot more empathetic. Like, I can really, like, I've had to spend a lot of time rationalizing and justifying the shithead I was for most of my life. And it sounds like all these things were being done to me. Like, you know, like my mom and her girlfriend straight up kidnapped me when I was 6 years old, took us up to Alaska, where we were all kinds of abused and, you know, tied to beds for days. My mom was an addict. Just horrible, horrible abuse up there that I won't talk anymore about. Sure. And then, you know, going to Freedom Village, I had issues because of that, you know, trauma because of all that stuff that happened. And I acted out because of it and ended up in Freedom Village, which turned out to be this hardcore cult and all that kind of stuff. And it sounds like all these things happened to me, but when I was in Freedom Village, it was legitimate brainwashing, but I was treating the other kids in Freedom Village the same way that they were treating me. We were all, watching each other and making sure the other one didn't slip up, because
there was a community,
that mob.
Was there a comfort in it, though? Even though you could look back at it and judge it now, but was there a belonging that maybe you were looking for that showed up there, irregardless of their?
No,
their
there was never a belonging. There was always just a fear that I wouldn't belong. You know what I mean?
I gotcha. That is a distinct difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
Being exploited by your fear.
Yeah, there are people who reach out to me every once in a while, because, like, I've gotten more and more popular and my name has gotten around.
Yeah.
People have reached out to me from back then, and I don't want to have anything to do with them, but
is there other people that have left and grew away from the experience? Like, not to put it as a survivors group, but is there support that arose out of that?
There are support groups. Yeah. I mean, like, it wasn't until just a few years ago. It was like 3 or 4 years ago. And like I said, I left when I was 19, I was 40. So, like, when I was in, like, my late 30s, I discovered, it was the first time I discovered that I'm not the only one who still literally wakes up in the middle of the night sweating and having nightmares about the place. Like, it was, you just have this reoccurring dream ever since I had my kid, this reoccurring dream that I have to tell Oliver that that I have to go back.
Oh, man. Do you have rituals today that ease that or support? Because the guy I'm around and always around, you're healthy and you're compassionate and empathetic. What's the primary support like that you first found when any relief? Because the why I asked, when we did that shoot for the Clearbrook, you were talking addict's language, and I've never seen you use drugs or drink. I'm like, John fucking knows us. Like you didn't need a guiding hand. You understood the language because we were doing in-depth stuff, 3-minute videos.
So here's the thing that might, I don't know, you're probably going to have a little decent-sized part of your audience that hates me for saying this, but there's a lot of things in drug and alcohol rehabilitation that is not unique to drug and alcohol rehabilitation. And rehabs are very, very similar to Freedom Village.
Some are.
In a lot of ways, a lot of the language and a lot of the way, you know, I mean, think about the no complaining rule. Like, how many, have you been to a rehab where you'd get lectured for complaining?
And I've been to 15.
Yeah. No, I mean, but, you know, qualifying that with, like,
sure,
where it's almost like
punitive.
Not necessarily punitive, but there is a measure of that, but more like where you have to, engage. It's almost, it almost is cult like where, you know, I mean,
yeah,
to an extent, and they have really good reasons for it, but it can get abused so easily. And there's just a lot of things that are like low level versions of what I went through.
Sure.
Separating yourself from your friends, like, you know, just trying to stay away from those bad influences. Like in my case, everyone who wasn't a hardcore believer in the same exact version of my belief, I had to separate myself from, which was everyone that wasn't actively there. So like, you know, is the definition of a cult. Like in your case, it's like, you know, separate yourself from the people who are doing the things that you don't want to be.
We're cult-like,
you know, I
think even we, in our reflection, like say if it was Alcoholics Anonymous, they write about themselves in a really critical way. And by the 50s, it's a failed cult. I mean, they don't kill apostates. They don't force labor. But what happens is there's in and out groups like any organic organization. AA is different in different regions. And sometimes it mirrors the style or level of Christianity in that region or the secular approach.
There's a lot of
those influences own a group. Then
there's a lot of pseudo spiritualism and religion, and you know, a lot of religious talk and in ways that kind of don't make any sense at all if you think longer than a second about it. And
where do you find when that all collapsed, the spiritual and the supernatural resources of Christianity, and you were now on the outside of this group, it still has to be scary, even though that was because you were part of that for so long. Where are you connecting? Where did you first connect? Because your life exploded. It turned around, and it became massively entrepreneurial, and you have a successful business.
So I got treated for ADHD. As an adult, when I was 35.
Yeah. And do you think
I got treated for ADHD? Like, it's a legitimate thing.
And that was the breakthrough for you.
Very few. Okay. most people listening to this are going to know exactly what I'm talking about, because 99% of addicts have ADHD, like, period. And you need to be treated. Unfortunately, you also have addiction issues, and
there's other ways. There's
no other good ways, though. That's the problem. And there's other clinically proven over and over again. 99, like I said, 99% a lot today. Yeah, no,
there's some good evidence coming out more and more that, like, if you can't take amphetamine salts, which are really effective in attention,
they're the only consistently effective medication for ADHD. Now,
I don't take them. But diet, falling asleep at the same time. There's regimens I could start to exercise agency in.
Oh yeah.
And the results are slower, of course, but my attention rises.
So, you know, when it comes to diet and going to bed on time and all, you know, and exercising regularly and all this kind of stuff, if you have ADHD, you're lucky if you can do that stuff.
Yeah. Well, guys, there's severity.
There's a mental wall there. Like somebody described it. I saw on TikTok, which I love TikTok, by the way. I have a huge problem with people who don't like TikTok. Yeah. You know, I don't have a problem with them. I just disagree violently. Yeah. Yeah. But somebody described on TikTok, having ADHD and knowing what you should do versus being able to do it is just like somebody saying, take your hand, turn the stove on until it gets red hot.
Yeah.
Take your hand. Just hold it to that burner for 1 second. You can physically do it, right?
Yeah.
You know you could do it. You could even tell everybody that you're going to do it. You get to that oven, you can't. You absolutely can't.
No, that's happened to me. I start cleaning a shelf. I have to write stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll reorganize an entire closet.
You reorganize an entire closet. Like, yeah, like you get hyper-fixated, hyper-focused. Crazy, that's an issue, but like... When somebody there are like, okay, I know I should go to bed at 10 o'clock, right? Yeah. 10 o'clock is a great time to go to bed. It's just like putting my hand on that oven sometimes where it's like,
no, I couldn't deal with ADHD the way I did in my 20s, the way I do now, but I designed a life that I could tolerate and still find some achievement in because I didn't work for anyone. I worked in my own hours, even when I had a staff. I could take 3 days off and I would just read, get hyper fixated on something.
Yep.
You would see this. I would do this. That's my lifestyle. But that lifestyle also didn't allow for intimacy. It makes relationships really hard. It makes my ability to get close or the ability to get close to me or me really close to someone else. It starts to fail by my 30s, and that's addiction returned. There's a way I could. That narrative is the same. Most addicts I meet, ADD or their ADD so severe, addiction is the first attempt to solve it. Be it if it's cocaine, amphetamines, that they feel sound of mind when they're using it, and they feel normal.
And I think in research backs me up to a certain degree on this, but I think ADHD is horribly named. It's not being hyper. Hyperactivity hyperactivity is a symptom of the cognitive issues. I'm glad you said that.
You know who says that too? Gabor Mate. We talked about the book. I don't know if you read it, Scattered Minds.
Oh, yeah.
So, I use that in some of my lectures when we talk about HDD and it's just such a reliable book.
So it starts out, you know, attention deficit.
Yeah.
There's no deficit of attention, you know, at all.
Yeah, it's really a mislabeled.
It's a cognitive disorder where, like, you're not receiving enough dopamine. So everyone else has this reward system of dopamine, which is a legitimate thing.
Yeah, yours is muted.
And yours is 100% muted. And that's why, like, it takes a lot to get you focused on something. But once you are, you're there.
You know how most research says this happens? It's trauma. It's attunement. If there's not a connection.
So
one of the new studies that came out, I'm not saying there's not genetic components.
No. Like, it's almost certainly genetic. So trauma adds to it and exacerbates it a lot. But ADHD is also one of the most well-researched mental disorders ever. 50 years now of research on ADHD. If a kid has ADHD, one of his parents does. So period.
With you, you openly take medication for it. You've talked about mm-hmm. it. What other things, was there any other thing outside of amphetamine salts or whatever prescription? Was there things you do on top of that? Did therapy help, or did cognitive exercises, or the way you would approach, say, a complex plan, like to improve executive function?
There's a lot of things that I was able to do because I got treated for ADHD. Like, it's surprising, like, when I'm not constantly bouncing from thing to thing to thing.
Yeah. I've seen you edit 365 videos. They were 3 minutes each within weeks.
Yeah.
Weeks, man. It was freakish. It was AI. We threw rough footage at you and just content flies back.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know anybody who could put out the sheer amount of content that I could put out.
I haven't met them.
At least at the quality that I managed to pull out of my ass.
That's good self-esteem. It's real.
You can do that. I've started to recognize lately that I'm not going to get into that. Some of the things that I've done, I don't know. I can't really put my finger on it.
Woke up a pocket of abilities that just.
See, the thing
is it agency?
It's a gradual thing. It's not something that happened overnight. I don't know. Like, at what point did I, like, at some point in the last 6 or 7 years, I went from, like, I started a video production company, literally, and I'm not kidding you, with my iPhone and my wife's laptop.
I know that. Yeah.
You know, like.
I love that.
I have $250,000 worth of gear in my studio.
Yep.
And a very good security system. actually a legitimately really awesome. Absolutely. But the largest studio in northeastern Pennsylvania.
Absolutely, hands down.
And stuff that I would have dreamed about. I would have made fun of myself for some of the crap that I have now. You know, I have more gear in my car right now because I just finished a shoot than my car's worth. I could buy 3 cars with what's in my car right now. Like, it is.
Regards, are you going to help me market my cult?
Yes, absolutely. I wanted to finish that real quick because I left that kind of hanging. I don't know at what point I went from having just an iPhone to having this big studio, and I'm not even at the end yet. You know what I mean? I can't tell you what I did. Like, did I buy one camera? Did I buy, like, I own,
you're in flow 15 state. Cameras now. You go into flow state. I love watching it when we work together.
Yeah, it's just
B-roll. But you would go on a trail of flow state, like, you were gone, and you came back, and what you captured could change the entire vision of what we were trying to do. That's fun. That's creativity. That's artistry. I always enjoyed that. And I remember when you started to say, you know, you were, significant things were happening with attention deficit disorder. There was a monumental change in the flow of what you were doing and how you were approaching how you wanted to build your business. And it was substantial to the point you're sitting in a studio, the largest studio in Northeastern PA.
Yeah. Well, it's not even I can't tell you how I got to where I am now. Like, I can't tell you, I can tell you how I got here, but it'd take a while. I can't pick out any one thing that happened or any one decision I made, because I made a shit ton of really, 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 really bad decisions.
Yeah.
And I'm still making them today.
Yeah, and you survived.
Like, yeah, it's just, and that's the same way with, like, being able to, like, and I don't think you're wrong. I really can empathize with addiction and people in addicts more than most. And I think a lot of it has to do with, like, I can genuinely understand. And, you know, I've been through, like I said, I've been through a lot of shit, but I've also done a lot of shit. And,
well, the two things too, you don't have to use alcohol or any drug to have an addiction. It's a behavior. It's a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
And it's very broad. We have passed an hour. You know, I try not to go over an hour, but I'd like to come back because you're a friend of mine and you're a substantial friend in the sense of how I built my new life. You were standing next to me most of the time and working. I never even considered it until we're talking now, how much time I spent with you when I and how uncomfortable I was for the first year when I stopped drinking. I didn't know if life was worth living at that point. And I always enjoyed your company, man. We've always gotten along, and I'm glad you helped me launch this podcast. You gave me the encouragement and the technical means on the back end to produce this that made it so enjoyable. I can't tell you. I took a break for the summer. I know that was a naughty thing to do, but I'm glad to be back up. And podcasting has changed the way I listen to people, and it still does, because I'm a hyper guy, you know. And I wanted to thank you for that, for coming on here and not only helping me, all the help you gave me the last 2 years and adding to this show. I don't meet many people like you. That is so kind. You're so giving, and you've overcome so much pain, and your sense of empathy is I think it's just really wild to watch, because you're not in AA. I'm so immersed in some like recovery community. I'm seeing this. You think normal people don't have any. It's just you get a wrong perspective on things.
Yeah, well, the thing is, to clarify, I'm not a normal person. I've never been addicted to drugs and alcohol. I do have some other issues that, you know, leave it on a cliffhanger. Maybe we can address next time.
Sure.
I have experienced a different level of addiction, and I still go through it, obviously. Yeah. But that's a whole other story, you know.
Well, you should be a regular guest on the show, because I like talking about AI. It's coming for us, John.
Yeah. When it comes to I don't know. I'll find a reason to argue about everything. Wait till you see that. Did I send you the video about the new Apple headset, the Reality Pro? No,
you were
Pro?
Talking to me. You were telling me to watch it yesterday.
Oh,
let's go downstairs and watch it. I got to use the restroom and have a smoke. Guys, this was John Edwards. He's the editor of All Better. He's my friend.
They may have heard me interrupt a couple times.
Well, yeah, these are unsanctioned interruptions, but this is flow. We trust each other at work, so that's how it goes, man. Thanks for listening.
And everybody, this is, before you hit, this is Joe Van Wee, the guy who, this dude, he's going to play me out now. This guy has done, holy crap, I've seen photos of you with, like, the Clintons, and
you're going to get me killed.
Subreddit. Yeah. okay, forget about that. Cycle. I'm just, you know, not necessarily the people, but like the scope and scale and breadth of what you've done.
I'm a pirate.
You started film school in Northeastern Pennsylvania, and you've
with Timmy, my cousin.
Everything Calvin. You touch, everything you do, you kill it. Like
smoke and mirrors, baby. I'm a showman. That's it, man. I like putting on a show. It's fun. I think, you know, at the core of life, it's drama. It's a drama. You got to play a good character in it. And, you know, want to be a moral character. So,
fair enough. Well, I'll let you
hit the.
I guess I'll let you hit the end and, you know, do your canned outro in 10, 9. We'll be right back.
I'd like to thank you for listening to another episode of All Better. You can find us on allbetter.fm or listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and Alexa. Special thanks to our producer, John Edwards, and engineering company 570 Drone. Please like or subscribe to us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. And if you're not on social media, you're awesome. Looking forward to seeing you again. And remember, just because you're sober doesn't mean you're right. Hi, this is Joe Van Wee, your host of All Better. I had a few announcements. If you're interested in subscriber content, which we're about to launch, this would be STEP workshops, cognitive behavioral therapy tools, and mindfulness practices that are approachable and can be very useful in reducing anxiety, rumination, and depression. Please send us a message on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn. And if you like the episodes that you've been hearing very much, please stop by Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating and a small review. This helps us stay relevant in the field of content and helping people and their families with substance use disorder. Thank you.